With us on the lowdown, I am Damian Barling, along with the icon, the main event, the showstopper, one Jason Herbert Walker Ross. If you've missed any part of today's show, we've had fun. We've had a good one. You can subscribe to the Lowdown Podcast on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. Amy Trask joined us in the 1 o'clock hour. Holly Rowe is going to join us at 2:30. And we're going to bring in Nate Lundy, the Fantasy Football Hour, here in just a heartbeat. As a matter of fact, why wait for that heartbeat when we can bring in Nate Lundy right now? Nate from the Fantasy Football Hour, welcome. You nailed it last week, Nate. Why is Amari Cooper?
What do I do? I don't remember these segments 5 minutes after we do them. What did I say?
You got it all right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You were 100 for 100. You batted 1,000. You were flawless last week. And I think where you really got our attention, Nate, is you posed the question that we have now spent 4 days trying to answer, is why is Amari Cooper considered elite? And then and then Sunday came around, yeah. And I think Raider fans across the country were asking that same question. And we've yet to get an answer.
When you lead the league in drops, something is wrong with you. That's all there is to it. I mean, look, it's not like I've got some kind of crystal ball. I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers, and I'm looking at the eye test, and I'm going, I'm not seeing it, guys. I'm just not seeing it.
Well, we all saw it on Sunday.
Yeah, and you were pretty close in the game in general when we just asked about the game besides fantasy, and you thought Denver by close to double digits. It was kind of tracking that way, but you felt good about that one, and you know, did everything kind of back up what you thought just based on watching? No one thought Carr would get hurt, but the actual game, it was pretty impressive what Denver did again.
Yeah, I was impressed by the defense. I think some of the success that EJ Manuel had comes when you're the defense in the no-fly zone and you've spent all week preparing for Derek Carr, and now all of a sudden you've got somebody different out there under center. I think some of the success was that. Some of it was, Manuel made some good plays, and he caught the secondary out of position. But frankly, at the end of the game, Justin Simmons makes a phenomenal catch. Let's be honest, T.J. Ward, if he was still on the Broncos, doesn't make that catch because T.J. Ward's not that tall. But Justin Simmons had the height, timed the jump perfectly, and was able to seal the deal. But, believe me, I was getting nervous there for a little while that Manuel was going to come in and save the day, and we were going to have the proverbial quarterback controversy going on in the Bay Area, because that's what everybody likes to argue about.
Are you, you're the fantasy football expert, but you're a football expert as well. You cover the Broncos there in Denver. You have been very lukewarm to your Denver Broncos so far this year. Are you buying in a little bit more now?
No, because they were 4-0 to start last year and they missed the playoffs. So, no, unfortunately, I'm not. I mean, I think this bye week is probably kind of an interesting timing. I know a lot of times teams like to have the bye weeks later because they need the chance for guys to get healthy for the stretch run. But, when you don't have a 39-year-old quarterback anymore, I'm not sure that the bye week really matters where it falls. But, guys, I hate to say it. I'm not 100% buying into it because I've read this book before and I've seen this team get started well. They did it last year with Trevor Siemian. And then struggled down the stretch and wound up missing the playoffs. So I'm not quite buying it yet. I think they've performed better than I expected. But the right side of the offensive line, in particular right tackle Menelik Watson, is a joke. And eventually teams are going to completely and utterly zone in on that if the Broncos don't come up with some sort of a solution, because they're running the ball okay. I would have liked to have seen, frankly, a little bit more Jamal Charles this past weekend than what the Broncos did, but they're running the ball okay. But there are a lot of times where Trevor Siemian has next to no time to throw the ball, and frequently that is happening from the right side of the line. And so they got to figure out what's wrong.
Nate, just on the division too, before I'm sure we'll get into some of our fantasy stuff, if you're not buying in on Denver, we know the Chargers have dug themselves a large hole, the Raiders are 2-2 and their quarterback's out for, a couple of weeks here at least. Is this going to end up being relatively easy, or like surprisingly easy for the Chiefs, or will this still be a division race?
I think we're going to see a division race. I think that inevitably in the NFL, we always see teams that, somebody jumps up and bites them. Somebody catches them off guard. That one tipped pass, that one sort of crazy play in the end zone winds up happening, and now all of a sudden, or in the case in the NFL, a blown call. Those kinds of things happen, and somebody winds up with a loss that you weren't expecting. And I think that that's going to happen to the Chiefs at some point in time. I mean, Kareem Hunt's numbers are amazing. Alex Smith is playing really well. But, you know, one of the hosts that I work with here in Denver who spent a lot of time in Kansas City covering the Chiefs just kind of chuckles and says, yeah, just wait till they get to the playoffs and then they'll blow it. So, you know, there's not even a lot of confidence coming from a guy who spent 7+ years covering the Chiefs.
Nate Lundy of the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour with us here on the Lowdown. All right, let's get into the fantasy aspect of all of this, Nate. What matchups do you like this week?
Oh, I love tonight. For once, we're going to have a Thursday night game that the final might be 112 to 110.
Nice.
I mean, it's ridiculous. First of all, the Patriots are leading the league in yards allowed. They are dead last in the NFL. So we can talk all we want about Tom Brady. We can talk all we want about Bill Belichick. But right now, that defense sucks. And I think that we're going to see some interesting things out of this game tonight. Right now, in my opinion, if you've got an offensive player in this game tonight, you probably want them playing because Tampa, who I expected a much better defense out of here early on in the year, has not played well. And obviously, I just gave you the stats on the Patriots. So tonight is a game that I definitely like. Then you get into Sunday, and within the schedule on Sunday, we've got two games that have the over-under where I like it, where you see it right around 50 or above. That Green Bay-Dallas game on Sunday afternoon is expected to be one that is high-scoring. And then depending upon where you look, the Sunday night game, we were just talking about the Chiefs, between Kansas City and Houston is also expected to have some scoring. So, you know, I always keep my eye on those. I like those kinds of matchups because if you expect scoring, that translates into fantasy. But tonight is definitely one where I think you got to get these guys active in your roster.
I'm curious about one guy for tonight, not only because I have him, but I know other people do, and I don't know what he will do immediately with his first game. But Doug Martin is involved in the game where, as you alluded to, Nate, they can't stop anybody. But what would you expect of Martin tonight and then maybe, I don't know, a week or two from now?
I think the thing that's interesting about Doug Martin, I've got him ranked, guys, right about 20th, which means, you know, if he's sitting on your roster, chances are, unless you're in a really shallow league, he's going to wind up being an RB2 for you, or he may even be your flex play that you decide to go with. This one to me is interesting because when you see a guy that comes off of the suspension like this, I think sometimes coaches will put them out there on the field and just sort of see how they react, how they move, and you know, are they running with a purpose? How exactly are they playing for those first drive or two, and then decide what they're going to do with the guy for the remainder of the contest? And so I think we'll know a lot here very early on. I've seen people that have him ranked within, you know, the top, you know, 16, 17, you know, maybe even top 15. But then I've also seen people that have him ranked all the way down in, say, the 30s or the low 40s because of the fact that there's kind of that unpredictability when somebody first comes back. But I do think that, you know, unless you're pretty deep at the wide receiver, or excuse me, at the running back position, he's probably a guy that you're going to sneak into your lineup tonight, especially with a bye week.
We got a question here, Nate, that's asking about Deshaun Watson or Phillip Rivers. What are your thoughts? Deshaun Watson against the Kansas City Chiefs, it's at home. What do you think about that Sunday night matchup?
That Deshaun Watson matchup is tasty, isn't it? I mean, after what he did last week and the performance that he had, he's obviously got the offensive weapons, and Houston's got a defense that's going to keep him in games a lot of times. So I think Watson is a great play for this weekend. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I think I've got him ranked about 8th. And, you know, a couple of months ago, we never would have thought that. But he's getting the chance. He's getting out there. He's making plays. Is he going to make some rookie mistakes? Yes. But look, he's got, you know, we saw Will Fuller get involved. We know DeAndre Hopkins is there. We know they've got a running game. I mean, this is a guy that he's getting you some points that way. And then you add in the fact that he can scramble a little bit here and there, and he's going to sprinkle in like a spice on top with some extra points for you. That's a tasty thing to have as a fantasy owner. And then, like I said, the over-under for that game, I think, is hovering at about 48 or 49. So the wise guys in Vegas think there's going to be a lot of scoring.
You know, Nate, I'm thinking about now that we've played 4 weeks. I mean, buys are starting to come up. People have done with the drafts. That excitement's done. Either happy with your team or you're not. Is this a time where you would recommend for people to start looking at trading? Maybe there's a few guys you'd say, oh, yeah, you know what? If I could, I'd trade them right now. Their value's so high, they're probably overperforming. Are there some guys like that that you feel like are overperforming through 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think there's guys that you want to take advantage of. I'll tell you the thing that you do. A couple of things. One, I got to give a shout out to one of my peers here in the business, Dave Richard, who writes for CBS and CBSSports.com. He has a column that he does every week that is trade values for guys. He basically puts a dollar figure on guys based on how they've been performing and then what kind of schedule they have remaining for the rest of the year. And it enables you to sort of, like, you know how we've always seen in the past that idea of that every draft pick in the NFL and the actual NFL draft has a value, and you try to compute, you know, I'm going to trade a first rounder and a fifth rounder for whatever, and you kind of do those. Well, Dave does the same approach with players, and it's hands down the best drafting tool I've ever seen when you're trying to decide what to trade within your league. So I really highly recommend Dave's. I mean, I do a lot of work myself, but Dave's is a column that I really go and look at every single week. So check it out. He's got it posted up at CBS, but you can go in and start to compute. But the thing you were talking about, guys to look at. Yes, you want to look at, here's the two factors. Put together guys that have started strong. But if you look ahead, we all know the fantasy playoffs for almost all of us are weeks 14, 15, and 16. So go look for somebody whose week 14, 15, 16 schedule is a little bit tougher, to where maybe right now you're pulling some points, but as you start to look down the road, you go, okay, wait a minute, this is not going to be an attractive matchup for him by the time we get towards the end of the season, so I better dump him now while his value is as high as it is. I think that's a really good sort of cross-reference that you can do with guys to find out whether or not it's time for you to dump them, or whether you can go ahead and ride them out going forward. So when I see a guy like Carlos Hyde, for example, 14, 15, and 16, they are taking on the Texans, the Titans, and the Jags, all teams that have strong defenses. The Titans are underperforming right now. So Carlos Hyde might be a guy that you say, hey, I'm going to ride this for a little bit, but then, man, by the time he gets late in the year, those are some tough matchups for him. He may be a guy that I want to see if I can trade high and help myself out at a different position.
Nate Lundy of the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour with us here on the Lowdown. Nate, there's two teams in the NFC that I think I'm irrationally high on. One of them is the Philadelphia Eagles. I was trying to make the point to Jason earlier this week that I feel like Philadelphia might just continue to get better as the year goes along. Alshon Jeffrey hasn't been particularly involved in the offense, but Carson Wentz has been really good. From a fantasy aspect, do you like Philadelphia?
Yeah, I like it for a couple of reasons. One, so Carson Wentz right now ranks fifth in the league when it comes to deep ball attempts. So you were talking about Alshon Jeffrey a second ago. This is a guy who's not afraid to throw the ball downfield. So I'm talking about deep ball attempts, meaning it's at least 20 yards in the air. And when he's fifth, it means he's taking those chances. And you know, Jeffrey's a guy that can take advantage of it. They've got others that can do it as well. He just hasn't been able to connect on them enough, but the attempts are there. All it takes is one or two of those, even like every other week for you as a fantasy owner, for you to wind up cashing in. And on top of that, Carson Wentz is averaging right about 24 yards a game rushing. Now, I know that doesn't seem like a lot, but anytime you can sneak those rushing yards in with your quarterback, you're doing well, because it might only be two or three extra points a week. But then, you know, if all of a sudden there's a week that he takes it into the end zone, now you're also adding in a rushing touchdown to what's happening. So I think Philly is one that intrigues me. I will say that I have been impressed by, at least initially here, by how Washington has played in terms of the Redskins, including their defense. And so maybe not much as much of an easy walk through the NFC East as I might have thought before. But I definitely think Carson Wentz and the way he tries to sling the ball around the field, that's a bet you can make as a fantasy owner that's got a lot of upside.
The other team that I am, again, am irrationally high on is one that is scoring a lot of points. They beat up my Dallas Cowboys this past week, and that's the Los Angeles Rams. Now, they have Seattle this week, but am I jumping in on this one too early?
You know, you might be sipping from the hooch just a little bit.
I know.
You know, I think you got to be careful with that one. You know, the Rams to me are one that you wind up outside of Todd Gurley, who is just having, you know, after a slow start, because we talked about him after week one and week two, is playing a lot better. But at the end of the day, you've still got Jared Goff, who you know, is starting to at least look like a guy where you went, oh, okay, now I can understand why they drafted him number one overall. But you're still talking about a team that is, you know, the defense has some strengths. It's also got some weaknesses. I think Wade Phillips still needs to make some improvements overall. But, yeah, Seattle. Then you got to go to Jacksonville. Then you're at home against Arizona, then a bye week for the Rams. So they've got some tough matchups. I find it interesting looking down the stretch, though. Here's their 13, 14, 15, 16 opponents, three of which are on the road, by the way. Arizona, Philadelphia, Seattle, Tennessee. So, you know, the Rams might be somebody that you can ride for a little bit, but then you may need to make sure you've got a deep bench or that you can pull one of those trades we were talking about.
Worth mentioning, Jason, the Rams last year were 3-1.
Yeah, that's right. So, and it changed on them for sure. Nate,
yeah,
I know.
But that was a Jeff Fisher kind of thing.
Fair point.
Yes. I mean, very true.
Fair point.
You know, that was kind of a boat anchor around their neck. I think Jeff Fisher is one of my favorite interviews from an NFL standpoint. He's really fun to talk to, but man, he just struggles when he's out there on the sideline.
Yeah, that's true. Nate, going into the year, we all thought the Raiders offense would be top notch, one of the better offenses in the league. So with that as a backdrop, even though they've struggled the last 2 weeks, part of it was playing Washington, who played great, and certainly Denver's great defense. So with that as the backdrop, then, would EJ Manuel be worth a start at all, or just would you just stay away from that?
I think he might be intriguing. In leagues where I've got a little bit of room on my bench, he could be intriguing for me to hold on to and sit there on the bench just in case. But again, EJ Manuel is one of these guys that I look at and I say, man, I read this book. I saw what happened before, and I'm just not buying into it. And I think, you know, I don't think Derek Carr is going to be out for you know, the long end of that range. I really think we're only looking at a couple of weeks. That's just a gut feel on my part, which means to me, if you're a fantasy owner, I think you need to be thinking about it right now the way you would think about bye weeks. And I think that you need to be looking at a guy to take your quarterback spot, or if you're in a two-quarterback league, I think you got to be looking at somebody to take Derek's spot that's really based off of the matchup more so than, hey, I want this guy for the next 6 or 7 weeks, because I'm not sure that that's going to be the case. Derek Carr struck me as a pretty tough guy. He's played through some bangs and bruises before. I don't know that this is going to keep him sidelined for long enough to where it matters. Now, I just brought up the two quarterback league, which has become a lot more popular these days within fantasy. Within a two quarterback league, yes, I think he is somebody worth considering, in part because the next three games for the Raiders are all at home.
You know, you brought up, we talked about the Eagles. I brought up the Eagles and Carson Wentz. We didn't mention LeGarrette Blount. That's a guy who has confused me and a lot of people on the text line as well, as to 1 week he doesn't play. 1 week he doesn't touch the ball. The next week he's good for 14, 15 fantasy points.
Yeah, and this is what happens when you wind up with a true running back by committee, and that's what's happening right now with him. They've got talent in the backfield that they can lean on, and therefore you're going to have games where maybe he is the hot hand or maybe he finds the end zone, and then you're going to have games where somebody else is looking good or somebody else has the right skill set for them to game plan for who their matchup is. So speaking of matchup, you look this weekend, they're taking on the Cardinals. The Cardinals have allowed the fourth fewest points to running backs. So not only am I not a big fan of LeGarrette Blount this weekend, I'm not sure I'm a fan of anybody in that Philly backfield, just because I think we may be looking at them airing it out.
Nate, also Monday night, we're going to see a debut for Mitch Trubisky. Is there anything there, or are you just kind of keeping your eye to see if he can do kind of what Deshaun Watson has done so far in his young career?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to expect a Deshaun Watson kind of thing. And I say that only because that, you know, look, Mitchell Trubisky does not have the guys around him. He doesn't have the talent around him. In my opinion, he doesn't have a head coach. And I'm not a huge Bill O'Brien fan from a Houston standpoint, but that versus John Fox, okay. So I'm just not feeling it with Trubisky, because I don't think he's got the same kind of weapons around him that a guy like Deshaun Watson does. I mean, Watson's throwing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. I think that's just such an advantage to him, that not only is he a playmaker, but he's got playmakers around him, and he's got a defense that'll keep him in games. I just don't see that in Chicago, and therefore I just can't really buy into Trubisky at this point, especially when he's playing in the NFC North, and they've got some tough matchups, not the least of which is Monday night against Minnesota.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned their opponents, Minnesota, who lost Dalvin Cook for the year.
Yes.
You mentioned running back by committee. It doesn't appear, it's not off to a good start for Adrian Peterson in New Orleans.
Correct.
If you're the Saints or the Vikings, or as I pitched to Jason earlier this week, if you're the Packers, do the Packers or Vikings call the Saints and say, hey, let's get Adrian Peterson off your team and try to let's work something out here?
I think the Saints need to trade him somewhere. When David Johnson went down, I thought for sure he was going to Arizona. But you know, that didn't wind up happening. Look, the Saints have running backs that can get the job done. They've got Alvin Kamara. They've got Mark Ingram. I mean, they've got what they need. I don't know why they've got AP down there. They don't need him. There are other teams that do need him. I don't know whether Minnesota would do that or not. I do think they need some help. They've got Latavius Murray there. They've got Jerick McKinnon, which, by the way, of the two of them, I like McKinnon better. But I feel like AP is not going to finish the year in New Orleans, but I really feel like it's like spinning that wheel on the board game Life. You know, I mean, I don't really know where he's going to wind up. I just get this feeling he's not going to finish in New Orleans, and somebody is going to wind up throwing the Saints something for him, and he'll wind up finishing the year somewhere else.
At Nate Lundy on Twitter, host of the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour. Nate, it's one of our favorite segments of the week. We appreciate you as always, my friend.
Guys, I appreciate it. And thank you for helping me remember the things that I say, because if I could get you to hang around a little more often when my wife is around, because she tells me stuff and then, like, I don't remember. And I could really, if you guys could just sort of follow me around and keep me out of trouble, that'd be great.
Unfortunately, our services do not translate to the household. We're sorry. That cost extra.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah, that costs.
All right, boys. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the game tonight.
You too, buddy. Stay out of trouble. That's at Nate Lundy on Twitter, our man Nate Lundy, host of the Fantasy Football Hour. Holly Rowe, sideline reporter for ESPN, joins us next here on The Lowdown. Welcome back into The Lowdown. Jason Ross, I'm Damian Barling. Happy to bring in Holly Rowe. Hollywood, how are you?
Hey, how are you? So good to hear your voice. How's everything?
Wonderful. It's great to hear yours as well, though I see you quite frequently as you wrapped up another WNBA season last night, but you wrapped it up in pretty familiar fashion. We had Rebecca Lobo on a couple of when she was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I asked her who the greatest basketball player she ever saw was, and we're still leaning towards Diana Taurasi, but it feels like Maya Moore is quickly ascending in that direction.
Yeah, Maya Moore, when she gets this look on her face, and she got it on her face last night, midway through the game, Lindsay Whalen got in a jump ball situation, and Lindsay pops up roaring in Maya's face, and Maya got fired up. And when she's fired up, she's impossible to stop. I mean, she makes so many great plays. She's a winner. It's so hard. You know, everybody always says that take Diana Taurasi to win that last second shot of a game, but over the course of a series, you can't go wrong with Maya Moore.
Yeah, Holly, how about the series in general? Someone had to win. This is so even for so long. I mean, they could have played 7 games. They could have played 11 games, 25 games. I don't know that it's clear that Minnesota was better. They were yesterday, but how great overall did you feel the series was?
It was incredible. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the stat that before last night's game, through 12 previous games, they were tied exactly 908 points to 908 points. It's insane. Like, you just can't even make up how closely matched these teams are, but they're two very different types of teams. You know, they play different styles. And I thought at the end of the day, the style that won was actually, you know, pounding the paint. Sylvia Fowles, they just could not stop her on the board. The rebounds, I thought, were a significant separator last night. And Sylvia made her presence felt, and I didn't think LA had a good answer for her.
Worth mentioning also, former Sacramento Mar Rebecca Brunson won her 5th.
Another one.
WNBA.
You know, do you want to know what? I voted for her for MVP. And some of the people on my crew were like, oh, come on, how could you not vote for Sylvia Fowles? And I was like, I don't think they win that series without Rebecca Brunson. She lends a toughness to them. She willed them to victory in a couple of those games when other people weren't playing well. And she got my MVP vote. I love that woman.
Rebecca Brunson is probably the most underrated player in the history of the WNBA. Here's a super quick story on Rebecca Brunson. I got into a shouting match with John Wisnett once in the back of Arco Arena because of something that had to do with Kara's knee. Like, I mean, full-on arguing, people leaving the room fighting. and he went to say, let's go talk to the team doctor right now. Remember, we're going to talk about Kara's knee. Rebecca Brunson had just had her first microfracture surgery because I think she's had two. And I remember the doctor of the Monarchs/Kings at the time telling us this was back in 2000. This had to have been 2007. 2007 that Rebecca Brunson's career was over.
Wow. It worked out.
And she has willed herself to this career. I see it on her face every time she goes up for a rebound. I just want to cry talking about her. She is so strong and powerful and fierce. I just love her.
And now you got to switch gears, Holly, because you're talking to us in the airport right now. You're flying from Minnesota to Austin to get back to your college football duties. Is that a difficult transition to turn off the WNBA and get right back into college football?
It is mentally hard because I feel like I'm mourning a little bit today. Like, I always get so sad when I say goodbye to one sport. And I actually woke up and I was so emotional this morning. Like, I'm not going to see these teams or these ladies anymore. But it's easy because I'm going to Alabama at Texas A&M, which should be an epic game, which has been a good game in years past. And Alabama is firing on all cylinders right now. I saw a great article this morning calling them the Death Star. And I thought that was so hilarious from the Star Wars theme of this Death Star is really hovering over stadiums and teams and doing a great job.
So when you get that assignment, I know you've had to do it before, but any kind of intimidation when you get around a guy like Nick Saban?
You know, he and I have built a great relationship, and it's so funny. Is the Nick Saban you see on the outside is very different from the one I get to deal with. When I was first diagnosed with cancer, I got this huge basket of caramel apples and apples and a cute note that said, "I hope an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Love, Nick Saban and Terry Saban." He's called and left me really touching voicemails like, "Hey, just thinking about you. Hope you're doing great." There is a really sweet and tender side to him that I don't think a lot of people get to see. And I love it when we're in our meetings. We had a meeting with him last week where if I can get him to stand up in the meeting and demonstrate a defensive technique to us in our meeting, I feel like I won. Like, yes, I got coach in teaching mode. And so I get to see a really different side of him that I love and appreciate. And it's really cool to kind of see the inside of how he runs his program, how he thinks, and how he treats people.
So that's kind of Holly Rowe with us here on the Lowdown. That's kind of a behind the scenes note. You guys just don't go out there cold and talk to them on television. You talk to them a great deal leading into the game. And Cam Newton is getting all sorts of attention today for all of the wrong reasons. Has a coach or a player ever kind of looked at you funny for asking a really intelligent question like what happened yesterday?
No, I can honestly say I've never been disrespected like that. And I feel bad about it because I know Cam Newton. I covered him when he was at Auburn, and I liked him. He's always been really nice to me. Every time I see him, he asks me how my son is. Like, he remembers I have a son. Like, he's been a nice, decent kid to me. And so I feel bad that he's going through this. But what he did was wrong, and he needs to apologize. Because I don't know if you guys remember seeing the John Gruden special when Cam Newton was coming out of college, but Cam literally could not draw up a play. They asked him to verbalize some plays he ran in college, and he literally couldn't do it. So, I mean, to this day, I would challenge Cam Newton to an X and O session on a whiteboard anytime because I'm pretty sure I could out X and O him. And he needs to understand that your sex doesn't determine how much you know about football. And it's unfortunate. Like, it really makes me sad that young kids like this would be sexist. Like, what did his parents raise him like? I know he has a strong mother in the home. She should have taught him that women can do anything, and I'm very disappointed in how he did that because I don't feel like he's a bad kid overall.
Now, you've established yourself, Holly, obviously, as one of the great women in this industry. Do you feel like that's still, for lack of a better term, a thing that goes on? I mean, this happened. Is it a case by case, or is it more on maybe some that are starting up? Do you feel like this is still an issue?
Well, I would have said I don't feel like it's an issue because I've never been treated that way. I remember one time early in my career, like this is in the early 90s, I would ask a question in our coaches' meetings and the coach would answer to the men in the room. He wouldn't look at me. And that changed very quickly. Like, that's really the only time I can ever remember feeling like a woman in these situations or feeling different in these situations because I'm a football person. I think if you talk to me for 2 seconds, you get it that I'm a football guy, So I have not experienced this to any great level, so it makes me very disappointed that a young person like Cam Newton would be that way. But, I guess I'm surprised all the time. I never thought racism was as overtly still such a factor in our country as it is with young people. So I'm getting surprised all the time and kind of disappointed. Like, what are our parents doing? Like, let's be better parents. Come on.
Well, the thing is, Holly, you don't have like a bad bone in your body. Like, you're probably the sweetest woman on the planet Earth. And I can fully imagine, like, Holly Rowe does not want to believe any of this stuff is out there. Like, nope, just everybody is as wonderful as Holly is. And if the world was as wonderful, we'd be in fantastic shape.
But it's hard to see it, you know, it is, because when you don't feel a certain way, it's hard to see that evil or that, you know, bad in others. And what I'm learning, like, I'll just give you one quick example. So when Colin Kaepernick first started kneeling down, I was really upset about it because I am super patriotic. You know, I've climbed the cliffs in Normandy where our troops fought. And I was like, how could you disrespect the anthem like this? Well, now as that discussion has evolved and I've talked to women in the WNBA who are protesting, and it's really opened my eyes of what I have experienced as an American is not what everybody else has experienced. And I need to listen and open my eyes. And, you know, my initial instinct was like anger and rage and how could they be so? And now I'm learning. And I think that's what the whole thing was about, is let's listen to other people who have had other experiences. Let's listen. Let's learn. And that's what I'm trying to do. So, you know, every day I'm learning more about our country.
And your son is Black, right?
Yeah, my son is biracial. And so, you know, I feel like very passionate about some of these issues, but my son has not been treated poorly. I haven't seen that overt racism in my family and in my life. And, you know, my son and I have had some really interesting kind of hard conversations lately about how he feels. He's living in New York City right now and how he is perceived. And it's just really opening my eyes. And I love these kind of topics that I can grow and learn as a human being about how I think about race and how I think about sexism. So, you know, I appreciate these types of conversations because I learn and grow from them.
Your son's also like the size of a professional wrestler. Has he gotten into that industry yet? He's a giant dude.
He's an actor, Damien. He's an actor. So if anybody out there listening needs to give my son a break, let's do it. He's in acting school in New York City, and it's going really great. He's doing great.
Holly, we had a lot of discussions during the scandal time of Penn State. And
yes.
You had a great relationship with Joe Paterno, and you were, you know, you had been around that university a lot. Does it surprise you that they're already back to being one of the top? I think they're clearly the top team in the conference. It feels like they might be underrated at this point. Penn State might be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, Penn State's really good. They have, I mean, this kid, Saquon Barkley, if you haven't seen him run the football, he is precious. I love watching him play. You know, he is going to be draft eligible this offseason, and a lot of kids in his position would be running carefully and trying not to get hurt and thinking about the next level. This kid is all in, running his guts out, returning kickoffs, returning punts. I think he even threw for a touchdown pass last week. So it doesn't surprise me because Penn State is a special place. Like, if you ever go there or visit that place, it's really lovely people, and it's a neat university and a neat place. Did they go through a scandal? Yes. But they are resilient. Like a lot of people are, you know, you find out what went wrong and you try to fix it. And they have been resilient in the face of that evil that was, you know, perpetrated by one man. So I do think that they've rebounded really nicely, but it's a good place to recruit to. You know, you can recruit kids from the Eastern Seaboard, ton of kids from New Jersey. I think Saquon Barkley's from right there in Philadelphia. So, It's a cool place, and I'm not surprised because they've got some really good pieces.
So if you go there now, and you said it was really the scandal was by one man, but Joe Paterno was thought of differently, kind of nationally after that. If Joe Paterno's name is mentioned there, how is that received?
You know, they actually said his name over the the PA system when I was there for a football game. They were honoring the 1980 national championship team. I think it was 35th year anniversary, and when they announced Coach Paterno's name, he got a huge ovation. So it's weird. I've had so many debates about this topic, and I think my son actually is the one who said it to me best, because I knew Joe Paterno. The guy I knew would never purposely cover something up, but my son said to me, Mom, because his power was greater in that town, his responsibility was also greater. Mm. And I thought that's the best way anyone's ever explained it to me, that he could have and should have done more. But you know, Jerry Sandusky fooled a lot of people, fooled a lot of social workers, a lot of professional people. So it's tough.
Holly, you're the best. Thank you so much for carving out a few minutes for us today. Safe travels.
Anytime. So great to talk to you, Damian. Thank you, guys.
Likewise. Absolutely. That is Holly Rowe, sideline reporter for ESPN. You heard her. She's covering Bama and Texas A&M this weekend.
Nick Saban sent her a basket of apples, caramel apples. That can't be the guy that we see on the podium and we count how many times he's slamming the podium. That guy? That's awesome. Good for him.
We'll wrap things up on the lowdown next. Thursday, October 5th. That means week 5 of the NFL kicks off tonight here at 4:30 on Sports 1140. The Patriots at the Bucks. First time for Tom Brady. First time for Bill Belichick as a head coach to play in Tampa Bay. Gronk is out tonight. Adjust your fantasy lineups accordingly. Again, Rob Gronkowski will not play tonight. This according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. He's out with a thigh. I love that. I love how that's how we announced it. He's out with a thigh.
Yeah, he has a thigh. Yeah.
He's got two of them.
Yeah.
He's out.
Well, you know where I stood on the game. That makes me feel even better about my pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they can't win without Gronk. Oh, wait.
Yeah, they've proven. Oh, wait.
Whoops.
They did fine last year. No, they can win without him, but they're adding up.
You know what?
And the defense is legitimately bad, and that's what I don't understand. Why?
And that's great, Jason. I did a lot of reading this morning trying to figure out the answer to that very question. They lost a lot of players. There's no question about that. The marquee players that they lost, Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins, as the Patriots are so used to doing, they ship guys off and they get draft picks in return and they get different things back in return. What was interesting with getting rid of Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins, they didn't get, with the draft picks that they used and all that, they didn't get any defensive players back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we're at. Now, I tried to dig in a little bit deeper. Went back to 2011. Much like this year, the Patriots were in really good shape offensively. They were ranked third in the league in terms of offensive production. Now, right now, I think they're second to last or dead last, but I think it's second to last in scoring defense. In 2011, they were somewhere around like sixth to last. So they were bad. They finished 13-3 that year,
mm-hmm,
with a scoring differential of plus 171. They also went to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to the New York Giants that year, but they did go to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not uncharted waters for Bill Belichick. I think the thing with the Patriots right now is we talked in offseason about them potentially going undefeated.
Right.
You know, a lot of very intelligent football minds
thought they could do it.
Thought they could go undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
And now, not only are they not undefeated, they're 2-2. They're going into a place that they, you know, at least collectively, haven't played before. They're playing against a team that people like, the young upstart team that people really like, and they have a terrible defense, which, again, 2011 is a long time to go back to try to find when Bill Belichick had a defense that you could compare to as bad as the one that they have this year.
Yeah, and not only is it 2-2, but they've played 3 games at home. And they've lost 2 of them, which they were basically invincible there. And the other one that they won, they probably should have lost to the Texans. So they're 1-2 at home already. They've only played the one road game. They won in New Orleans. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But now tonight, short week in a place, I know that atmosphere is going to be good. I don't know that we ever think of Tampa Bay as one of the best atmospheres in the NFL. We don't. But Thursday night, short week, that big stage for that group on the Tampa offense that's been pretty good, that gets Doug Martin back. Jameis is blossoming. They've got an elite receiver in Mike Evans. I just feel like it's going to be a big night for the Buccaneers. And I don't think New England's figured it out in 4 days defensively.
My ears kind of popped up when we had Nate Lundy on at the earlier this hour talking about how he expects the game tonight to have a lot of points. We're not used to that. I think we saw it. Was it last week? We had the Thursday night game score a lot of points, and we've seen it recently.
Yeah, the Rams and Niners a couple weeks ago.
The Rams and Niners, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. I think tonight will be fun.
Yeah,
I think tonight will be a lot of fun. This could very well be Jameis Winston's. Remember, Cam Newton and the Panthers had their, hey, look it, we're here, we're good, we're 3-1, we're a good football team. You guys have dismissed us for 3 weeks. We're here. You dismissed us all of last year. We're good. Patriots wins count as more than. For the record, they're 1. The perspective of the team, it's like 1.5 or 2.
Right.
This is a this could be Jameis Winston's coming out party tonight.
Yeah, there's a few teams, especially out here in the West, where it feels like we just don't get to see whether even we. A lot of people have the Red Zone channel, and you'll see glimpses of all the teams, but it never feels like Tampa Bay is on as a primary game. And so this is their opportunity to showcase to everybody, and I think they're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Your boy is back. You talked with Nate Lundy about this earlier. Doug Martin, are you playing Doug Martin tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I drafted him to be one of my – he's like, oh, your second running back or your flex. I'm like, no, he's going to be the guy.
Your tendency to draft problem children
is
what you do.
Your problem? Define problem.
Well,
Jason is the Jerry Jones of fantasy football.
He is. He is.
Except for – well, never mind. Better success in the postseason.
Oh,
too soon?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yes. Way too soon. Uncalled for. As a matter of fact, can we end on a happy note? Yes. See, God bless it.
He's had 800 things going on today.
I spent 15 minutes on the phone, so I'm a little behind on the happy music.
Talking to who?
Yeah, getting things set up in San Antonio.
Tell San Antonio to kiss your ass. You're the producer of the Lowdown. You're busy during the 12 to 3 hours. Or tell the operations manager you want a raise.
I've been telling that, screaming in its face.
Unbelievable. I've been on the phone for 15 minutes. I'm not even in a good mood to do the happy song.
We do.
I don't want it. No, damn it.
I thought it was the other song. I thought you could play the other one.
What other song?
The Paul Abdul Janet remix.
No, we don't need that. I actually didn't have a happy. You know what the happy story?
Oh, then you don't have a happy story. I